So welcome, everybody. This is Elaine with Impact ADHD, and I'm welcoming today Dr. Sharon Saline, who is a psychologist and practices in Massachusetts and has a great information about diagnosing, treatment, and management of children with ADHD, learning disabilities, and a range of mental health issues for adolescents, children, and their families. And today we're going to be talking about anxiety and how to effectively deal with it, and really about fostering resilience for kids with anxiety. So welcome, Sharon. It's great to have you.
Thank you so much, Elaine. It's great to be here.
So why anxiety? Why, if for a website of parents of kids with ADHD and complex issues, what's so important about talking about anxiety?
Well, anxiety is, in my practice and in my experience and also in a lot of the literature, the best friend of ADHD. And
yeah,
what
great
happens
way to put it.
Is, well, kids with ADHD have their own idiosyncratic ways of processing information. And they are aware, either, you know, quite consciously and sometimes unconsciously, that they are missing things. Or they process differently or at a slower speed than their friends. But in some way, they're slightly different. And this causes kids anxiety because what most
yeah.
kids and teenagers in particular want is to be like other kids.
Mm-hmm.
And they know that they're different. And while
yeah.
we can celebrate those differences with them as much as possible, the reality is that that difference doesn't always feel great.
It's funny because what I often say is, you know, if you think about it, if you've got a kid who's, you know what you're asking them to do, and they know what they're being asked to do, and everybody else can do it, and they can't, and they think they should, but they can't, that's going to make you anxious, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And what happens is that if there's a time where they're asked to do something and they can't do it, or they do it differently, but not in a way that they consider to be a good difference, the next time that action occurs, what comes with it? Their best friend. Anxiety.
Mm-hmm.
Worry.
Interesting.
Am I going to do it this way?
So I don't want to put you on the spot here, but can you share a little bit? Do you know any stats off the top of your head? Like what percentage of kids are we dealing with who are dealing with clinical anxiety?
With ADHD, I think it's...
Or without.
The numbers of kids who have anxiety without ADHD is very high. It's something like 1 in 8 in the United States. And with kids with ADHD, I would say it's a fairly frequent occurrence, but I don't know the statistic offhand, but it's somewhere between probably 30 and 50%. And, you know, again, it's not always what we the statistics are changing, and I think the last time
yeah.
the statistics came out, it was a little lower. But in the last few years, what has happened with parents is that, you know, since 9/11,
mm-hmm.
things have changed, and there's been a breach in a sense of security that parents feel in their lives, and there's also been so much information online that they can find about horrible things that happen everywhere. Now, the reality is that the statistics around murder and robbery and violence in our country have indicated that those things have gone down. And actually, kidnapping haven't changed statistically since the 70s. But because there's so much access to all of these other things that are happening everywhere now, people in general have a higher level of anxiety.
Yeah.
We've got a societal
anxiety or anxiousness that's happening on top of whatever individual issues are happening for these kids.
Right. So, you know, parents are slightly more anxious, or maybe very more anxious, and kids are more anxious. So what happens with anxiety is that anxiety is the physiological response to worry. So what happens is there's a thought in the prefrontal cortex, ooh, something bad is going to happen. And that sends a message directly to the amygdala in the hindbrain, the back of the brain, which is one of the oldest parts of the brain. So all living creatures have amygdalas, and they all have this fight or flight response, right? So when this message goes from the front of the brain to the back of the back of the brain has two responses. Fight. I'm going to, you know, respond to that tiger that I think is in front of me, or I see in front of me, basically. Or flight. I'm going to run in the other direction. So I see the tiger, and I have two choices. And that worked well when we were in the jungle. But today, what happens is that there's ideas of scary things that that come into the brain without the actual scary thing, but the response is the same. And the only way that the amygdala can calm down is when the prefrontal cortex calms down. And where are executive functions housed?
In the prefrontal cortex.
Right. And where do kids with ADHD have their deficits? In the prefrontal cortex. So this is why these things go hand in hand so often. So the skills, the basic skills that the kids need are already at a deficit because they have of their ADHD. So it is harder for them to calm themselves down physiologically, mentally, emotionally.
Right. We have a term for that. You want to hear it?
Yeah.
You're going to love it. We call it amygdala hijack.
I love that. That's awesome.
When the primitive brain takes over and it hijacks the brain from the prefrontal cortex and you know, that back of the brain takes over and you just can't do anything while the amygdala has hijacked the brain. You have to reclaim the brain first before you can move forward. But anxiety sort of holds kids, it holds the adults who struggle with it as well in that triggered, hijacked state, right?
I love that. I think that's absolutely a great term. And yes, when that hijacking has occurred, there aren't a lot of, you know, rational choices because we're not dealing with rationality anymore.
Right.
And, you know, I know a lot of people say, well, they just need to take some deep breaths and calm down. And about the last thing a person wants to hear when they're in that hijacked state is calm down, because that is not going to help them. And what most kids want is their parents to reassure them, you know, to come up with lots of reasons why what they're afraid of is not going to happen and comfort them and tell them that it's okay and they're going to protect them. And
to rationalize it for them is really what you're saying.
Exactly, exactly.
To make it make sense.
Exactly. And the thing is, I actually think that failed because while, of course, when you're a child, if you're four and you see a spider and it's big and ugly, you're going to be afraid and you want your mommy or daddy or mommy or daddy, depending on your family construction, to grab you up in their arms and hold you and love you up and let you know you're safe. That's appropriate when you're four. It's not really appropriate when you're nine, and it's definitely not going to happen when you're 14. So we have to help our kids build this skill to reassure themselves. And that's difficult because anxiety is all about insecurity and discomfort. I want to feel safe and secure, and I want to feel comfortable, and I don't. And I don't see how I'm going to get there. So what I think has to happen for parents is that some acknowledging, or what I would call mirroring, of their child's fear is necessary. I see that you're really afraid that you're not going to do well on the test tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
But I'd like you to notice that you did well on the last test. What do you think you might have done this time that's like what you did last time? Or, I know you didn't do as well as you would have liked on the last test. Let's look at what we did this time to prepare you that's different. Then, when there's still anxiety left over, you can say, okay, so you still have some nervousness. What could you tell yourself that would help you feel a little bit more confident? Let's brainstorm some sorts of conversations that you could say to that nervousness. Because what happens is the kids think the nervousness is them. And what I try to do with kids is say, nope, we're going to name that nervousness. That's the test monster. And the test monster has now taken over your brain. We want to, you know, tell that guy to back off. because you can't stop anxiety. What you can do is recalibrate it, is address it, is change your relationship to it. And that's what we want to teach our kids to do. Because if they can separate themselves from their anxiety and learn to talk to it, i.e. talk to that part of themselves that's afraid, they're going to get much stronger at dealing with their own issues, which is ultimately what we want for our kids.
Well, and what strikes me about what you're saying is that it's not that you don't want to use reason to redirect if they're scared of the test or not turning something in or their teacher or whatever. It's not that you don't
Right.
want to apply reason. It's that you want to help them find a reason that makes sense to them. So
Exactly.
you can say all day long, oh, don't worry, it's going to be okay, but they're not going to hear that. But if you help
Right.
them see how they understand it could be okay, then you're actually teaching them to self-soothe.
Correct. And that is why it works, because I, your mother, cannot self-soothe you for the rest of your life. I know
Right.
you don't. I know that you, my child, I know that you don't want to go to school because you don't want people to laugh at you. I get that. We need to sort of strategize how we can talk to that fear that's taking over your brain, that somehow there's something about you that's laughable. Because really, everyone has moments where they get laughed at, and everyone has moments where they laugh at others. And the difference between collapsing with sort of avoidance of those moments and sort of being able to say to yourself, oh, you know what? I think this is the time I'm going to say, they're laughing, I can laugh too. Or they're laughing
mm-hmm.
because it's actually funny, I should laugh too. Or they're laughing, no big deal, everybody laughs. To come up with some phrases that they can say to themselves and then write them down, because we have kids, these are kids with ADHD. They may not remember these things, so we need to have them written down at home, at school, on their desk, have the teachers have them, have lots of people have them, so that we're all on the same page with dealing with that test monster or that I'm afraid to go to school monster.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I just want to reiterate that this is, you know, we're not really just talking to parents of kids with ADHD. We're talking to the parents
Right.
of kids with ADHD and learning disabilities and anxiety with or without some of these other issues. I mean, all
Yeah.
of these complex kids struggle with anxiety at some point or another. Because the nature of being challenged as a kid makes you feel that way.
Exactly.
Right?
And I think...
For being out of sync as a kid.
Right. And I think, you know, no kid wants to be out of sync, but all kids are out of sync at some time. And
exactly.
And we can help... that's where, actually, whatever reassurance or rational thinking needs to be addressed, that's where it should go. Because... what kids want to hear is that they're not alone in their difference. And
mm-hmm.
Because that aloneness is what's scary. And I think the mistake parents make is they do reassurance around that aloneness instead of maybe telling an anecdote from their own lives and helping the kids think back to a time in the child's life when he or she may have felt alone and afraid and did it anyway. And
I overcame it. Right.
That's right.
Yeah.
And because our brains, with their bent towards the negativity bias, don't remember those times. The adults have to be the memory for those times.
Yeah. And until the kids absorb them for themselves. I have
Right.
this memory when one of my kids who had a tremendously fabulous therapist when she was a little girl. And what she learned from that was feel the fear and do it anyway.
Exactly,
right?
And that's totally what I'm talking about. You know, I feel the fear, but the fear is not controlling me. I'm going
Right.
to do it anyway. And that's
I'm going to make my own choices.
But that's a very sophisticated and sometimes really challenging thing for a child to do, because the fear seems
mm-hmm.
so big and strong.
Yeah.
And so that's
Yeah.
why it's so important to remember, remind, and acknowledge those times when the fear was conquered to help your child do that, whether they're 5 or 18 or 25 even sometimes, or
right.
You know,
we actually have a strategy we teach parents that's exactly that, sort of an acronym that's exactly what you're saying, and we call it ACE. Mm-hmm. And it's acknowledge compassion before you explore the options. Right. So first, mm-hmm. acknowledge what their experience is, what their perspective is, with some compassion. You know, I hate it when I feel that.
Yeah.
Way. That happened to me when I was whatever. Right.
Yeah.
But really, to see it and make sure they know they've been seen and recognized before you get in to try to redirect or explore different ways to handle something.
I love that an acronym because it's easy to remember, because a parent can remember, I need to play the ace. And
right. It's like playing your ace card.
Exactly. It's playing your ace card. That's what it is. And that's an easy thing to remember to do. Oh, right, I have to acknowledge, I have to be compassionate, and then I have to explore. Got it. Okay.
We have a few minutes left, but what strikes me about this conversation is you just said something that kids want to know that they're not alone in their differences. And I mm-hmm. think that parents feel exactly the same way, that they
Agreed.
Want to know that they're not alone in raising these kids with complex issues. And so any thoughts on how parents can use the same sort of approach to handle the stressors of raising complex kids?
Well, I actually think that some of the things that I believe are these 5 C's that I'm writing in my upcoming book.
Awesome. And then you've got a preview for on our website, so you can go to
yes,
the article
exactly.
on ADHD on 5 steps
right.
to improve cooperation with your kids.
So the self-control. Look at yourself first. I'm freaked out because my child is going to camp for the first time, and I'm worried
mm-hmm.
what's going to happen. My child is also nervous about going, so both of us are nervous. First we have to bring it down, because being both of us being agitata, as I like to say, or agitated, you know, isn't going to help us figure out what to do, because you ultimately want to figure out what to do. So we
mm-hmm.
have self-control. Then the second is compassion. You know,
yeah.
How can I, you know, love my child in spite of this worry? And
yeah.
why might my child have this worry, given what I know about his or her life?
Mm-hmm.
Then the third one is collaboration. That's where that, you know, explore in your ACE comes in. You know, how are we gonna collaborate together to brainstorm some ideas of what we can do. Then we're going to be consistent, which doesn't mean we have to do it the same way every time. It means that most times we're going to try to do the thing that we agreed to do. Not all the time, but hopefully more times than not. And we'll get better as we go along. And then the final thing is to celebrate, which is what I was talking about earlier, that, you know, remembering and noting when there was a success so that we can come back to it, because we want to build up the positive self-conversation. And because kids with LD or learning or ADHD or other issues feel particularly sensitive about their mistakes, since they feel like they get a lot of negative feedback about them anyway and they feel self-conscious about them, this celebration is really important.
Yeah, for sure. It's such a huge part. Well, you know, I'm reminded, Sharon, of why I love having you as an expert, because the work you do as a psychologist is so simpatico with the work that we do as coaches. I just love that about your work, because it's really affirming and positive and strength-based and about looking for, here's where we are, what do we do to make it better, without all of the sort of agita, as you say, that sort of bogs us down. So
yes,
so
I mean,
we need to – well, go ahead. Finish up your last comment, and then we got to bring it to a close,
I was just going to say the feelings are mutual. Life is challenging enough. Let's try to take what we have and work with it and turn the focus into something that's more positive. It makes all the difference.
Yeah, for the kids and for us and for our relationships with them.
Absolutely, really, for everyone. Yeah.
Right, what we had kids for in the first place, right?
Exactly, exactly.
All right, so I hate to end this conversation, but I think it's time to draw it to a close. But thank you for your wisdom and your encouragement and your understanding. I love to have an opportunity to talk about anxiety because it shows up so much in our community, and I think it gets the short shrift, so I really appreciate really focusing on it today. Again, everyone, our guest was Sharon Saline in the Massachusetts area, Northampton, Massachusetts, who's doing some great work with families and children with ADHD support and other issues as well, of course. It has a book coming up soon. You can find out more about her at her website, which is drsharonsaline.com. That's drsharonsaline.com, and you can find out more about her bio, and all that information is on the website as well. Thanks again, Sharon, for being with us.
Thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure.
To come back again. All right.
I would love to. It's always great.